o'clock hour of Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike, hanging out with you on a Friday. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you want to be a part of the conversation, you know, State Roofing text line, 98973. We'd love to hear from you. Mike, we've been sitting on this story for a couple days. And it's because we were like, you know what? There's only one man that we can talk to about this. He's a buddy of ours. He works for 710 ESPN. He does all the digital stuff, all the everything you see on social media. He also happens to be my esports guru. If I have any question about esports or video games in general, this is the guy I holler at, and he joins us right now on Cairo Nights. Taylor Jacobs, what's up, Taylor?
Hey, can I hire you to just walk around and introduce me when I walk into rooms? Because that sounds pretty nice.
No problem. I'll give you. I have an MP3 of the Chicago Bulls entrance music, and I'll just let that go and talk you up. And you'll have.
I love it.
You won't have an enemy in any room.
I'm there. Yes, please. Anytime you're free.
Not till you start talking.
Yeah, that's right. Anything that happens after the intro is your fault.
Exactly.
That's on you.
Yeah, that's fine. I take that burden. I'll wear that.
So the story here, Mike and I both found just completely fascinating. And
yes.
It's the idea that, so last weekend, they had the Madden Bowl tournament. They've been doing this for a couple years now, and it's obviously, it's the Madden NFL games. Everybody knows it. A lot of NFL players play it. It's a pretty, pretty big deal. If you win the Madden Bowl, you get $65,000 and you get this like incredible belt. You get the Madden Championship belt, 24 karat gold plate, over 700 Swarovski rhinestones. It weighs about 12 pounds. And of course, you get bragging rights for all your friends. Now, the reason this is news is twofold. One, the player that didn't win, okay, I'm going to start there. The player that didn't win, his name was Daniel Mycroft, is from Mukilteo, which is kind of cool. I like that. But the big story here, the guy who did win did something that is just absolutely fascinating to me. He did not throw at any point in the entire tournament one single pass. Have you heard of this? Is this a common strategy?
So it's not that it's common, but definitely run-focused teams in Madden. And, you know, I've said this term a bunch of times with you, Aaron. That's the meta, right? That's the game beyond the game, is that run-focused teams tend to be more successful in this iteration of Madden just because of some of the players and some of the offensive lineman skills. It just makes it a little bit easier for you to get the run game going versus the passing game. So, yeah, he opting to not field a true quarterback in the championship, instead using punter Tress Way, which is pretty remarkable. He had a quarterback. He had Eli Manning on the roster. But this opened it up because before every Madden game, you essentially draft your team. You do like a fantasy draft. You can draft players from now or players from, you know, back in the day, all the way back to, you know, night train type days of black and white football. So you saw a couple of familiar names actually on the championship team. You know, Frank Clark, he had a real big impact on that defense for him. Taylor Mays, O'Day product, he was another big star in that defense for him in the championship. So, and another fun fact is the worst player on his defense, ironically, was Jadeveon Clowney, who the Seahawks are trying to bring back to be one of their best defensive players on their team. So, a little bit of irony that this guy was able to win with Clowney as his worst player on his defense.
So let me backtrack just a second here. This guy won the 2020 Madden tournament without a quarterback. He had a he had a punter playing quarterback.
Let me back up on. So I guess I get it. And this to me is sort of somebody who's discovered a way to kind of effectively hack the game. He's found a tendency in the game. I think a lot of players probably have. And you know, if the game has a tendency this way, you start playing it. I mean, the most famous in all of e-sports, electronic sports, of course, is the Tecmo Bowl, Bo Jackson, right?
Yep.
I mean, he was impossible to stop, and so you literally had to eliminate him as a player because anyone who got him just won. And so that was the first one that I really remember. There may have been one prior to that, but this one, so we figured that out. But what doesn't make any sense to me is this. Why would you use then a punter? Why wouldn't you just put another running back as your, is it only someone who is listed? I mean, I guess I've never played, I've only played very little bit of Madden. And so in that drafting process, can you just draft a running back and play a running back as your quarterback and just expand the running options in the backfield?
Yes, you can. I mean, technically you can draft any of the players and play them at any of the positions. However, Tress Way, this punter, you know, had a little bit of QB skill, not a lot. I think it was in the 50s or 60s, his total actual QB rating. But the resources that he spent to draft Tress Way before this allowed him to free up all these resources the really nice Frank Clark and Taylor Mays and Clowney and to get good offensive linemen a good running back.
Like a salary cap situation.
Because he doesn't need to have the guy throw, so he can just have a reasonable athlete who can hand the ball to somebody else and get out of the way.
Yeah, so even like, he doesn't have to have a good ball security rating or anything like that. He literally just has to be able to get that ball to the running back. And you got to be able to, you know, call audibles, make sure your linemen are pulling or blocking in the right direction. So there's a lot of stuff that happens at the line that went into Joke winning, not just, you know, this formula specifically. You know, he is really, really talented at the game and has been talented, you know, over $200,000 in career earnings in the game. Wow. He's been in 11 majors. He's been in the Final Four numerous times. He's a name that people just in and around Madden recognize. So this was great for him to finally take it over the top. He truly was sort of able to take advantage of this system and take it to the limit and not pass a single time to win a nice championship belt and a nice little check.
Is that just a tendency in this most recent iteration of Madden? And if you tried this, say, on another iteration of Madden, you wouldn't have the same level of success?
Yep, yeah. So this is going to be Madden 20. This is going to be their online version, their competitive version. If you were to go back even last year to Madden 19, if you were to do this, I think you would have drastically different results, and you could go back further and further. But next year it'll change, right? Like they'll take this into account of how dominant he was able to be and some of the factors that he brought into the championship, and they can apply that to the next game and realize, hey, this is sort of a loophole that can be taken advantage of. Is there a way we can make passing a little bit easier or essentially balance the game in a different way? So it's not quite so run dominant. You can win without a single pass.
Yeah, speaking of dominant, the final was a shutout. It was 17-0. Yeah. Is that common in championships? Because you're talking about, you know, theoretically, the two best players.
Yeah, no, it's not. Not only to shut someone out. I mean, usually teams are good enough to get in the field goal range and they have a good enough kicker to get that off, but a 17-0 victory tells you a couple of things. One, that he's a fantastic Madden player, and two, that the clock was running the entire time, and that's what you get from a run team as well,
right? The clock is
always run, and then you're playing two teams. You're playing the team that on the field, and you got to play the clock. So, and when you're down, you get in the hole, you're down 10-0, and you can't get anything going. It's just so difficult to establish anything. You're taking risks. You're pushing it a little bit more than usual, and that sort of led to that 17-0 scoreline. It might not have been that dominant. Joke was fantastic, but I think the gameplay itself was a little closer, but I mean, Joke just absolutely dominated, so he deserved the win throughout.
When Madden players are playing, when they're playing at that sort of elite level that these guys are playing at, when they're practice, I always assumed that they would just practice plays, offense. They would figure out ways to scheme against certain defenses and other people's tendencies. But are they actually also looking for essentially coding level cheats? In other words, not like cheat codes, but in other words, are they trying to figure out the game's actual tendencies and exploit those as much as they are trying to learn how to play better against X opponent or X player?
100%. And to be honest with you, I think that's what separates a regular video game player from these guys, that they can take in all that information, not only from the game, but the like I said earlier, the meta game beyond the game, right? Understanding that running the ball and having a run-focused team is going to help you more than a pass-focused team, and understanding these sort of minutia, meta terms and things happening outside of the game, not only in Madden, in every sort of competitive esport or video game, that these kids and adults are taking any sort of information that they can get and practicing and pushing the game to their limits. And to be honest, the developers love it, because so often these are the people who find the exploits in their game and find the problems. And then they can go back to the drawing board and say, hey, look, you know, joke one, he didn't throw a single pass. We got to do something to make it a little bit more difficult to run, a little bit easier to pass. Or in, you know, in Overwatch, if there's a hero who's a little bit too strong, you know, how can we bring them back down to a level? Or how can we make the person who counters that hero a little bit stronger? So, but then there's all, when you tinker that, then there's also these sort of butterfly effects, these unintended consequences. Certain things get turned down, turn up, and then that's where these stars sort of find and exploit the games.
When it comes to esports and these big, massive tournaments, I know that, like, worldwide, it's been all over the news for the last couple of years now. Esports is just exploding. You're talking about, you know, millions of dollars in collective prize money.
College scholarships now.
Is that true?
Entirely.
Wow.
Yeah, Division One, you know, University of Utah has a program. You're going to be getting a lot more schools here. You know, depending on how things shake out here with COVID, I think you'll see a lot more schools announcing their programs, not at a club level, but at a true
scholarship
school
level, yeah.
Sponsored, yes, college level.
Yeah. Wow, really? So where does Madden stack up among the big esports games?
To be honest, in the middle to lower tier. Sports games are in this sort of weird zone where they have such big followings, right? And they have all these fans, but not necessarily this competitive side to the game like we see in Madden this year, right? I think now leagues and even producers of the games are really starting to lean into these leagues and having these esports. So as far as Madden goes, the sports games are sort of trying to play catch up in that arena. They have these big followings, but as far as the esports tournaments and that, you know, sort of structure, they're still working on that. You know, League of Legends and Dota, Counter-Strike and Overwatch, those are the big games, tier one games that a lot of people are tuning into. And not to say that Madden won't ever get there, but they're still young and growing as an e-sport and as a competitive video game versus a casual video game that a lot of football fans play. It's now becoming this e-sport where people can truly, even if they're not big football fans, excel at this game.
Yeah, I was going to ask about football fans. But do you think it has anything to do with the fact that we're talking about American football and the other games, the, you know, Dota and Counter-Strike and all that, really are worldwide phenomenon, where ours is a little more localized?
Yeah, Aaron, I think you're 100% right there, that specifically football and Madden, even, you know, FIFA as well. FIFA's a massive game worldwide, but not necessarily the mainstay that Madden is in America. But yeah, you're right. The big tier games are usually they don't have that sort of country-specific or area-specific motif in the game, that they're truly like characters or heroes that can be from anywhere. I think why you see a little bit of the lack of growth in the sports area. But, you know, the leagues are really starting to buy into this, and I think that's where you're truly going to start to see the growth beyond, is that these leagues accepting these teams and these players, finding way to incorporate them into their own, you know, organization and make content with their own teams. And I just think, and look, the NBA is doing a fantastic job. The 2K League is great and another shining example of a new esports league growing in the right way.
And if I can, so, if I could interject just for a quick second, my Golden State Warriors, even the E-League team or esports team, undefeated at this point.
Is that true?
Yes.
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 Yeah.
And if I could just interject that, feel free to continue.
Wait, are they playing?
Yeah.
Are they playing like actual team? Like, is there a sanctioned Warriors?
The NBA owns its own esports league, NBA 2K.
Yeah.
They went out. They were the first of the leagues to say, you know what? We want a piece of this. But they're also one of the first to embrace gambling. I mean, in other words, saying, look, this is reality. We might as well get a cut. And that has that's not fully vetted yet, but they absolutely set up their own league. Sure they did.
Yeah, and they're fairly progressive just as a league in general, right?
Right,
that
sure.
They're going to always be generally on the front instead of in the back. So you have the 2K League, Warriors Gaming. Matt Pittman loves to remind me how great they're doing. So I love to see that, though. And it's so cool to just see. The thing about I love about some of the NBA 2K League, the Overwatch League, is they're starting, and even in the Call of Duty League, we have a event happening in Seattle, quote unquote, but it's not because there's no events. But the Call of Duty League has their home series. It's being hosted by the Seattle Surge this weekend. So for me, they released this shirt today that, you know, it looks like a Sonics logo. They released a trailer, you know, basically with a bunch of Sonics. You know, songs and Squatch and a bunch of stuff cut into it. Just the pride you get from some of that stuff, right? And just the pride you get from your college or your city or your state or your area or your country and using that and finding a way to sort of build that into esports, because it's such a powerful tool, not only in life, but in sports, that just you see something and you instantly are a part of that team and you feel a part of a group. And it's something special when you win and everyone gets to win, to all enjoy this together. And it's beyond just the players competing on the field or the digital gridiron, as I like to call it. But it's truly going to be fascinating to see the future of this and where it can go when more and more people lean into this and buy into this and support it.
And it's really smart from a, I don't know if branding is the right word, perspective, but you're reaching out to people who are generally younger. They're folks who may not have had an inclination to follow sports in the traditional sense, but they got into it via video games and started to appreciate it. And now that's all under your umbrella if you're a professional sports league. I think it's really smart of them.
Yeah, and you can also get, you know, someone from New York gets drafted to Warriors Gaming. Their whole family becomes a Warriors Gaming fan.
Right.
They also become a Warriors fan.
Right.
Then they have this association with that organization forever. And then their kids have an association with the organization. So it's just, you know, you can see a lot of the seeds of these traditional sports leagues and these esports leagues. And I just love seeing the joy it can bring to some of these communities and just how people can be a part of a community, because, you know, there's a lot of gamers who are introverts and they feel isolated sometimes from the community, and they isolate themselves sometimes from the community. So to engage with those people and to make them feel a part of something, I think you're truly going to get not only fans for life, but truly engaged fans.
That is Taylor Jacobs. He is the social media man over at 710 ESPN Seattle. He's an esports guru. He's the host of the Joystick Club podcast. How's the podcast going, Taylor?
Well, my dad was actually sick, so I wasn't able. We took a little bit of a break so I could help take care of my dad. But he's all good now. He's back to work.
That's so great.
So we're going to start to ramp that back up here. Titans and the Seattle Surge having their big events here locally, so we'll talk about some of that stuff here in the next week or so as we ramp it back up. Yeah, so I'm excited to get back going again, and excited to talk some more esports.
If you like what you heard tonight, you can check out the Joystick Club wherever you get podcasts. Taylor, thanks so much for talking to us, man.
Thank you, Taylor.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We'll be back with more Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason Mike playing a little Cannonball
by Ray Stevens. I just learned today that Ray Stevens, who I adored as a child, he sang goofy, silly songs. And, you know, I'm like a Weird Al kid. The Streak, of course. Mississippi Squirrel.
Right.
I mean, I could go on and on. Ned Nostril in a South Seas Paradise. Put Your Blues on Ice, Cheap at Twice the Price Band.
Did he do Devil Went Down to Georgia?
No.
Mm-hmm. Who was that?
He covered Misty. That's Charlie Daniels. Okay. Charlie Daniels did that.
Okay. He bought a song from a good friend of mine.
No kidding.
Yes.
Really?
Made my friend a bit of money.
I bet he did.
Yeah.
I might have had the cassette.
You might have had
the
cassette.
When I was a child. So the reason we're playing that is because, look, Cannonball Run's a real thing. Highly illegal, but an actual thing. And it's basically, it's a race from New York to California, specifically the Red Ball Garage in Manhattan down to the Portofino Inn in Redondo Beach, California. And something has happened, Mike Lewis, in the last 7 weeks, I think, that the Cannonball Run has been beaten 7 times in 5 weeks. Excuse me, I got that wrong. The Cannonball Run record has been beaten 7 times in the last 5 weeks. Why? Because roads are open.
Right. It's such a...
All right.
It's such a bad, perfect idea. I mean, the Cannonball Run is a real tough event. It's not just the date. Speed is not just the issue. You have to... It is involve a fairly sizable team of people. When you decide to do the Cannonball Run, you have a network of spotters in every state. You have people running the route in front of you to make sure everything is clear. It literally takes a national organization of your own because there's other people doing it too. And it doesn't always happen all at once, like everybody making the run at the same time. The first one, which was before it was named the Cannonball, was the Coast to Coast race in 1915.
Wow.
The average speed was 50 miles an hour.
Okay. Blistering for 19.
And it took 271 hours.
Good God.
To get the most recent, apparently. So we don't know the winner, the most recent winner. Has not been announced because I don't think they like to say immediately, and they also make sure they do a lot. There's a real process in confirming the record.
Right.
But the last year's, or the last winner prior, got it under, they never thought you'd get under 30 hours, and they never thought you'd get under 28 hours. They thought it was impossible. They hit under 26 several times.
Amazing.
In the last, and now apparently the record holder now, and we'll find out at some point, hit sub 26 hours from Manhattan to Redondo Beach. I first found out about the Cannonball in probably 76. I went back and looked through because I remember reading about two race drivers. It was a story in an auto magazine in a Dino Ferrari, a modified Dino Ferrari, and they made it, and I'm looking up their time right now, and it seemed like ridiculous at the time, but I think they did it. All right, so they did it 35 hours.
Mm.
Now, and that was averaging, they probably averaged, I don't know, 85 miles. But averaging 85 miles an hour, it means you're flying, means you're well above 100 for a lot of that drive.
Right, right.
They're now averaging, I think the most recent average, the high published average, I think is 106 miles an hour across the country, which means you have stretches where you're doing, I don't know, $160, $170.
Yeah,
you know, through places in the through the open highways, you're rerouting based on weather. It's again, I'm not trying to encourage this behavior, and sorry for the state troopers who are listening.
Please don't do the Cannonball Run.
It's a very, very difficult thing to do. It tends to be very high end drivers. It tends to be people who are really, really well prepared. I mean, it sounds frivolous and dangerous, and I guess it is all those things.
Yes,
but they take as much control as in an uncontrolled environment as they can.
It's they're looking at this recent team, and while, like Mike said, they're staying sort of anonymous at this point, they do know that they used an Audi A8 that had been highly modified. They put some big marine fuel tanks, put them in the trunk so they would not have to stop for gas as often.
Yeah, so the generally the modern equivalent, and they tend to use these big, fast European sedans. They're really perfect for it because you can fit a big fuel cell in them, and they're relatively comfortable. They handle well. You can sit in it for a long period of time. You can put all the rest of the gear, which means from radar jammers to radar detectors to infrared detectors, they look like a fighter plane cockpit.
It's crazy.
In there, once they get these things fully kitted out. And so the with the fuel cells, they get it down to, roughly speaking, 4 fuel stops across the country.
Wow.
And on top of that,
it's like 2,800
miles. At the fuel stops, they will frequently have a spotter at there with the pumps ready to go.
What?
And so they can literally pit stop this, and these guys can run in, use the bathroom, get some water, you know, switch drivers, fill the fuel cells, which so the fuel stops tend to be longer than they'd like because these are regular commercial gas pumps. They're not the fast fill things you get at a racetrack. And so they're always tense about the amount of time it takes to fill a 40-gallon fuel cell or an 80-gallon double fuel cell.
Do you have a favorite race?
From a motorsports standpoint?
Yeah.
There's a couple of motorcycle series. I tend to follow motorcycle racing much more than I do car racing. It's just, for me, a lot more interesting. So, yeah, there's races that I do. But, I mean, as far as cars go, I loved the idea of the Cannonball when I was a kid. Man, I dreamed about it. I thought this would got to be the best thing ever. And I'm really feeling kind of, I guess, a little ashamed that it didn't occur to me. Not to do it, because I could never do this, but
sure.
I just didn't think, like, of course, there is no better time to have tried to make this record than now.
Than with very few people on the road.
There's another unofficial illegal timed race is the race lap around America, which is essentially a loop of America, relatively close to either the border or the coasts all the way around.
That is madness.
Yeah, it's
madness to me. My cousin used to take me to. I had an older cousin when I was growing up on the East Coast, and we used to go into Philly and drive his. I don't know what it was. It was like a lowered Civic hatchback. It had just biggest speakers. He would play these bass tapes in the cassette player and lowered, and it had these neon lights and everything. And we would go, this is pretty Fast and Furious, by the way, we would go down to Philly and do these street races where people would just, we didn't actually race, but it was like a big scene. And this just mob of cars would all go to one sort of industrial area of the city, and it would be late at night, there wasn't really much traffic, but they would stop up the roads and have these drag races.
Yeah, it's pretty common where I grew up as well. Drag racing was huge because all the roads were straight. There wasn't a whole lot of it wasn't really road racing style, and that was back in when I was young. It tended to still be more the American muscle cars, and then the generation after when I was in high school, that's when all the tuner, the Hondas, the Supras, all of those cars, the WRXs, all of that started becoming more popular. The small Japanese sedans and European sedans became much more popular at that point.
253 says Daytona Ferrari, and it was Dan Gurney. Does that make sense to you?
That's one of them. Dan Gurney and Brock Yates won in 71, one of the early Cannonballs, and that became a very famous story. And in fact, that's ultimately inspired the movie. But the one I'm talking about was like 4 years later, and it was a Dino Ferrari, a couple of other racers, but they did do it in a Ferrari Daytona, absolutely. I think kitted out with super bright halogen lights up on the front, it would make it look like daytime when you were driving at night. I remember seeing pictures of that car.
I could never
And that's a car right now that is worth, I don't know, in the $250,000 to $500,000 range because it's such a collector's item.
Man, I could just never, ever, ever do this kind of thing. I'm all for driving. I'm all for long trips. I'm all for cross the country kind of stuff. I've driven across the country 4 times, 5 times.
What was your record?
Just solo? Yeah, like 4 days. I mean, this is madness, 26 hours. Get out of here.
It's more like the bowling ball run.
2,800 miles. Yeah, mine was the cannonball crawl. I called it. I just stopped. And my radio was broken.
Yeah.
And, I had bought a car out east, and I had to drive it back here. Bought it from a friend. So I drive back. It had a CD player, but I didn't have any CDs. And I made it to about Illinois and had to pull into a Walmart.
Absolutely, you did.
And I bought Master of Puppets by Metallica. I bought a 2-CD set of Chicago's Greatest Hits and Johnny Cash 4, the American one.
Oh.
Hurt on it.
Those are all good albums.
I just blasted those.
But I will say that your average speed picked up during Metallica.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely didn't during Chicago.
You can't drive slow to Damage Incorporated. It's impossible.
No.
More Cairo Nights after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Is this the best song ever written?
Potentially.
Love this song. Welcome to Funky Friday, everybody. It's the first Funky Friday. Triple F here on Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike. Frank Shire's with us. DB with us, of course. It's time to spin that wheel of segments, guys. We do it all the time. I'll give it a little hurt over here. Every night at this time, we spin the wheel of segments. What are we going to have here on a Friday? Oh, great.
What?
Great news. It's a new segment.
No.
Yes. It's a new segment. But I need to introduce you to someone. This is the Rapid Fire Random Question Robot. That is the name of the segment. And I have to wheel it. I got to get it from over here. I'll take it over to Mike.
That thing looks heavy.
Mike, I want you to read the questions. Yes. It's super heavy.
I'll read the questions.
Oh, God. Okay.
This is the Questrotron 600.
When was this thing made?
Probably in the late 60s,
yeah,
I think. It's
like
got that kind
brick.
Of vibe to it. But what we're going to do is we're gonna ask the Questrotron 600 to give us a question, and it will, and then we'll just go around the horn and answer quick,
instantly.
Top of your head, whatever you're thinking, and we'll see how many we get to. So let me plug in the old thing here. And
like the lights.
Mm-hmm. All right.
First question to Aaron.
Okay.
What is your favorite way to meet new people?
Ooh, at a bar.
Frank?
If they come over to my house.
D-Bank?
At work, Starbucks specifically.
Oh, nice.
Breaking into houses.
Breaking into houses, he said! Questrotron, sweating.
Let's start with Frank this time. What is the smartest thing you've seen an animal do?
Our dog Rosie can, if you say, where's your ball? She will go on a hunt throughout the house and go find it and find the ball, the treat ball, and bring it to you.
Nice.
I like that.
D-Bank?
Not necessarily smart, but my old dog Suki, when I was a kid, caught a bird right out of midair. Just like,
whoa.
Right out of midair. He was a shih tzu, too.
Wow. No way.
Wow.
A little shih tzu? Aw.
That's right.
That bird was looking for a little natural selection.
I've seen like when crows and elephants problem solve and they do like they tap out math or they figure out if I do this thing and use this tool, that blows my mind every time.
Okay. Our old bulldog who got tired of me throwing this inflatable ball for him ran over to it, popped it, and went to sleep on top of it.
I thought that was a good one.
That's solid.
DB, first, can human nature be changed?
No.
Nudged, but not changed.
Frank?
Nah, possible.
I think it actually can, but it takes a traumatic event to change it.
That thing's getting a little warm.
Oh, yeah. The temperature of the room's like 4 degrees hotter now.
Guess we're going to start with me on this one. If you have children, what career do you hope they pursue? And what career would you never want them to get into?
Mm.
Well, I don't have children. What career would I never want them to get into? You know, I actually wouldn't. The joke is you'd say journalism or broadcast or something like that. The job I wouldn't want them to get into, probably, I don't think I'd want them to get them into being a lawyer. I think most lawyers I know are not super happy with their gigs.
How about you, Frank?
Frank?
I would love it if Sarah became a cartoonist. I would be horrified and very, very sad if she entered the sex worker trade.
That's fair. That's a good answer.
Mr. Burbank?
I'd be fine with my kids honestly doing anything except like finance. I don't want them to be like on Wall Street, some Wall Street fat cat or something like that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's an issue of priorities for me. As long as they were doing something that they enjoyed, that they were passionate about, that fulfilled them, then I'm cool with that. And I wouldn't want them to do something that they hated, that they just had to grind out to pay the bills.
Okay.
What?
This is the best one.
Whose
of
turn?
All of them.
Oh no,
it's Aaron first.
Oh good.
What dumb thing did you believe for a really long time?
Oh my God, everything.
Oh,
yeah, everything. Something that I dumb thing that I believed that failure is bad. I really, really, really struggled with not wanting to fail at anything ever, and it made me a total insane mess. And as I've gotten older and failed a bunch, I've learned how valuable failure is.
All right, Frank?
That radio would only be fun.
Do you still believe that?
No, not for a long time. Not only fun, no.
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
All right, David?
I'm not saying this because I can't think of anything on the spot, but obviously because I'm the best, and I never have been misled or questioned anything. Ever.
Never.
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 Yeah, that's our solid DB.
Mike?
I believed I was reasonably... This is so. I think people who are sort of hobbyists at sports get this comeuppance once. I believed I was reasonably quick on a motorcycle till I got on a track with people who were actually quick on a motorcycle. And it looked like I was in reverse the entire day.
One last one. Oh, God. Who's first?
I think it's you, Frank.
Oh, no. Okay.
Frank, what have you gotten too old to put up with?
Running really fast for a long period of time.
Great answer.
That is a great answer.
It's true.
Aaron?
DB?
Now we'll go there next.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
What's something I've gotten too old to what?
To put up with.
Oh, drama. I don't have time for that.
In life.
Yeah, just period, general.
Okay. Mr. Burbank?
Big crowds and like festivals or concerts. I don't want to be standing up. I don't want you sweating on me. None of that.
Great answer. Mike?
Top Ramen.
Oh. Top Ramen? You're over Top Ramen? Oh, well, thanks to everyone out there. We got a few texts, but man, we were just blasting through that. And special thanks to the Questrotron 600. Gonna wheel that back during the break. Stacey Joe coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, everybody. Stay tuned. Car Nights.